This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up at this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Ethiopia's government has ruled out holding new nationwide elections to address the grievances behind nearly a year of deadly protests. But the opposition says the changes the government is undertaking are not good enough.
That's Martha Vanderwolf reporting from Addis Ababa. Details coming up.
Also, without firing a shot, pro-Islamic militants in northeastern Somalia took possession of a port town in the Puntland region early today. And the migrant camp in Calais, known as the Jungle, has finally been cleared out by French authorities.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, pro-Islamic militants took possession of a port town in the Puntland region of northeastern Somalia early today without firing a shot. Residents of Kandala told VOA about 60 militants entered the city and raised their flag on top of the police station and historic building. Local officials have left the town. The militants are led by Sheikh Abdul Qadir Mumin, a former al-Shabaab cleric who commands between 200 and 300 fighters. Mumin pledged allegiance to Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi a year ago. The U.S. State Department has declared him a global terrorist. Gandala is 90 miles from Bosaso and is a strategic port across the Red Sea from Yemen. The militants have received supplies and training from the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, allies in Yemen. Puntland leaders declared the region an autonomous state in 1998.
French authorities have finally evacuated the migrant camp in Calais, known as the Jungle. They officially declared the camp as empty today after several days of relocating up to 8,000 people. It was the third attempt this year to close it. The Associated Press says today's evacuation saw some migrants set fire to tents and blankets in the dirty makeshift camp as a protest. Authorities say firefighters had to rush in to prevent the fires from spreading throughout the camp. Most migrants have been relocated to official reception centers in other cities that provide food and shelter. They can officially apply for asylum there. The migrants had gathered in Calais, hoping to sneak across the English Channel into Britain.
Ethiopia's government has ruled out holding new nationwide elections to address the grievances behind nearly a year of deadly protests, but the opposition says the changes the government is undertaking are not good enough. Marta Vanderwolf has the story from Addis Ababa.
Government spokesman Gedashu Reda says Ethiopia will not call for an early vote. The next regional and nationwide elections are scheduled for 2020.
So what we are trying to do is to follow the election cycle. This government doesn't have the slightest of intention to all of a sudden change the law and call for a vote based on a changed law. We are here for the long haul.
Reda said Wednesday, Parliament will instead convene to endorse a proposal from the Prime Minister to reorganize the cabinet. That is expected in the next week, though Reda did not give an exact date. Opposition leader Merera Gudina of the Oromo People's Congress told VOA this crisis can only be solved with new elections.
Still playing their own game, that is reshuffling of their own personnel, which for us it is nothing. When people are asking fundamental basic change of policies and resignation of the ruling party, and for asking and demanding for new elections.
During protests in the past year, hundreds have died, thousands have been arrested, and the government has imposed a six-month state of emergency, restricting movement and independent media. Students began demonstrating in the central Oromia region in November of last year over an urban expansion plan for the capital city. But the movement has widened to take on a host of concerns. Since 1991, the country has been run by the same political coalition led by the Tigrayan ethnic minority. Earlier this week, the Oromia regional government appointed new leadership, but those appointments were from within the same party. The regional government remains led by an ethnic Oromo faction within the ruling coalition, the Oromo People's Democratic Organization, OPDO.
ጥያቄዎቹን የለማት ጥያቄዎቹን በአጠቃላይ ያሉትን ጥያቄዎችን በአግባቡና በወቅቱ ፈጥነን አልመለስንም ነው
ፍካሩ ተስማ spokesman for the Oromia Regional Government says they agree they have not responded to the development needs of the Oromo people in the appropriate manner and speed. But he says that they did not come to the conclusion that the OPDO cannot lead and administer the Oromo people. Human rights organizations have often criticized Ethiopia for its lack of human rights and political freedom. In the last elections in 2015, the ruling party won all the parliament seats. The government has suggested adjusting the electoral law so opposition parties could take more seats. Solomon Tesema of the Blue Party says changes to one law are not enough at a time when people are demanding freedom.
We need to have even other compromises, both within the party and outside the party. We are now working to end up the EPRDF's monopoly in every policy and in every activity that is going on for the last 25 years.
The international community has called for an inclusive dialogue to address grievances and has called for security forces to show restraint. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
South Sudan's government is looking at increasing the number of states yet again. Last year, President Salva Kiir nearly tripled the number of states from 10 to 28, a move that angered the armed opposition. Some argue the country cannot afford these changes. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
South Sudan's presidential spokesman, Atenny Wek Atenny, says that a committee led by first vice president Taban Dengai was formed last week to determine whether South Sudan should add three or four more states to its current 28. Atenny says the people, not President Salva Kiir, are asking for the new states because different ethnic groups have been contesting certain areas.
In South Sudan, the creation of 28 states has brought jubilations and brought many people, not less than, more than 80% of the people of South Sudan, has appreciated the fact that the states were increased to 28.
But many disagree with Atenny's assessment, saying when Kiir took the unilateral move of increasing the number of states from 10 to 28 last year, he angered many, including opposition leader Riek Machar, who wanted 21 states. And Sereno Hiteng, former deputy foreign minister of South Sudan, does not believe that another increase of states is going to solve the country's problems, which include an ongoing conflict that has killed tens of thousands since it started in December 2013, in addition to a more than 600% inflation rate during the past year.
Even adjusting state boundaries, even if increasing or reducing the states, cannot solve the current crisis in South Sudan, because it is more about political power now.
University of Pretoria law professor and South Sudanese expatriate Remember Mia Mingi says Kiir's move will increase conflict in the country. He argues that Kiir wants to increase the states in order to buy loyalty and support from those who will benefit from the corresponding new political jobs, albeit in a time of financial crisis.
So it is a job creation that then has resource implications. And the little resource that we have, as you know, the government basically does not have the resource to finance the budget of this year. And so to now create additional structures that demand money is certainly being quite unrealistic. And it is using in an unfortunate way public funding for personal and political reasons. And that is basically an abuse of his office.
Atenny disagrees with the idea that the president has sinister motivations behind the pending decision.
But these are administrative units that are to be created within the sitting government. There's no reason why it is to be taken negatively.
Kiir said last year that he acted within his mandate by increasing the number of states to 28. But Mia Mingi argues the president does not have the constitutional power of altering the boundaries of the state. He also says there are two active cases in the Supreme Court of South Sudan that are challenging Kiir's 2015 decision.
And the case is still active in court. And as a result, the president cannot even at the moment, until that case is decided, contemplate in the remotest sense an initiative to create new states.
Atteni says that the committee is looking at whether to create one new state in Barl-Ghazal, two in Upper Nile, and possibly one in Equatoria. He says President Kiir will then take the recommendations of the committee and make his decision. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Rescue efforts at the site of Friday's deadly train derailment in Cameroon got a boost yesterday when workers discovered a baby alive in the wreckage. The accident killed at least 80 people and wounded hundreds more. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kinzika has the story from Yaoundé.
Residents of the capital have been trooping to the Yaoundé Center for Children in Distress to see the country's so-called miracle baby. When VOA visited, the one-year-old girl cried in the arms of anyone but the military men who brought her in nearly 4 days after the accident. Serge Mondumbi is an official of Cameroon's Presidential Guard.
It was amazing to see that one soldier wounded has in his hand a little baby with mud everywhere. And also we saw that she has blood. And immediately we asked the nurse to go to examine, to look at the baby, if something can be done.
It is believed the child's mother died in the crash. The child was brought in alongside another infant survivor, an 8-month-old baby. That baby's mother was killed in the accident, but witnesses told VOA she had tossed her baby out the window of the train car before it flipped. Authorities are hunting for relatives of the two babies. Cameroon's Minister of Social Affairs, Pauline Irengene, says they will be given appropriate medical care while investigations continue.
Of course, we will not give them the babies until we ensure that they are the real parents.
Cameroon's President Paul Biya has ordered a month-long investigation into the train derailment. Some say the passenger train was overloaded, but the train operator's parent company, Bolloré Africa Railways, told Reuters Tuesday the train was moving at an abnormally high speed when it went off the tracks. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Pro-Islamic militants took possession of a port town in the Puntland region of northeastern Somalia early today. The migrant camp in Calais, known as the Jungle, has finally been cleared out by French authorities. And nationwide elections are on hold as the Ethiopian government tries to address grievances behind nearly a year of deadly protests. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Following Boko Haram's 7-year reign of terror in Nigeria, regional armies have largely contained the extremists in their hideouts in the vast Sambisa forest. The militants now resort to sporadic attacks, including suicide bombings. The movement has split into two major factions. One is led by 25-year-old Musab al-Banarwi, the son of the sect's dead founder. VOA's David Arnold reports.
A few months ago, the Islamic State terror group in Iraq appointed Musab al-Barnawi to lead Boko Haram as the Islamic State in West Africa. The video announcement was an affront to Abubakar Shekau, the violent extremist who had led Boko Haram since the founder, Muhammad Yusuf, died in military custody in 2009. The group's conflict with the Nigerian military has been the focus of Nigerian journalist Isaac Linus. But the reporter says the rivalry between Shekau and newcomer al-Barnawi has turned into open warfare.
Yes, according to information that we hear coming from those places, we've had people who have reported that there was a stand-up fight, a battle, where they shot and they killed each other. And we heard that Musa al-Barnawi moved out of that part of Zambisa where Shekau is occupying.
Al-Barnawi had served as a young lieutenant of Shekau, who had gained a reputation as a ruthless leader of Boko Haram. Linus spoke to a co-founder of Boko Haram and a former teacher of al-Barnawi, who wished to remain anonymous for the interview. He explained the link between al-Barnawi and the Boko Haram founder.
Al-Barnawi, his name is actually Habib Muhammad Yusuf. As you know, Muhammad Yusuf, the founder of Boko Haram, is his father. He is the second son of Muhammad Yusuf. He was always around his father. So that naturally means that from an early age, he has a history of Islamic extremism in him. He has grown up now and he has taken over what father's legacy. That would be his history.
Under Shekau's leadership, Boko Haram ran a scorched earth campaign in three northeastern Nigerian states, burning schools, churches, and mosques, kidnapping women and girls, killing Muslims as well as Christians. Shekau's ties to the Islamic State in Iraq were tenuous at best until al-Barnawi appeared in a video as the Islamic State's new leader of Boko Haram in Nigeria.
Barnawi's group have in videos and in audio tapes have stated very clearly that they are against Shekau's form of Islamic fight, the way he goes about it. They don't accept the fact that Shekau kills all Muslims. He goes to the market, he blows up bombs and all Muslims are killed. He goes to everywhere, public places, and he kills Muslims. They feel that Muslims are not supposed to be targeted, but other religions such as Christians are supposed to be targeted. So Shekau has also been killing Boko Haram members he thinks have not been loyal to him. They think Shekau is running wild and killing everybody around.
The former mentor knew al-Barnawi as a young student in a secular school near Maiduguri.
The man told me that he taught Muhammad Yusuf and that he was a very clever and intelligent boy, very gentle boy, good looking. And he says by his assessment, he should be about 24, 25 years now. He's not actually surprised that Habib has taken leadership in Boko Haram.
Linus says the initial image of al-Barnawi was that of a rational figure. Then the reporter talked to a Nigerian who'd recently abandoned the movement and fled from their Zambisa stronghold.
He calls it Farensa. Farensa is the name of the place where Boko Haram is dwelling, where the leadership stays in Zambisa. And he tells me that al-Barnawi, even though he looks gentle, he can also be very brutal. He recalled an incident in 2014 when they came to attack Bama. Al-Barnawi ordered the killing of about 200 people. So to him, the boy is as brutal as Shekau. He's as bloodthirsty as Shekau.
Linus now sees the son of Yusuf as another zealot devoted to the elimination of Christians from Nigeria's north. It's also a war with Nigeria's military that has led to the deaths of thousands of civilians and displaced more than 2.5 million Nigerians. No matter how the Boko Haram rivalry plays out, the biggest question is whether the Nigerian military can exploit the current division and defeat those who have devastated a major portion of the nation's mostly Muslim north. David Arnold, VOA, Washington.
Zimbabwe's information minister is quoted as saying that President Mugabe has no intention of withdrawing from the United Nations despite recent comments. Harare Newsday Online quotes Christopher Moshoi as saying Mr. Mugabe's comments were taken out of context and were meant to convey African Union concerns over the makeup of the UN Security Council. The report says last month the Zimbabwe leader told ruling party members that he would mobilize African nations to pull out of the UN in protest. Zimbabwe relies heavily on aid from the UN and others to help feed many people who are food insecure. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, estimates more than 4 million people in Zimbabwe could be food insecure during the peak of the lean season from January to March of next year.
Tunisia is considered to be the only country in Northern Africa and the Middle East to have had a successful Arab Spring. Although Tunisia has a young but stable democracy, its economic situation is difficult. Fadhel Abdelkefi is the country's Minister of Development, Investment, and International Cooperation. Reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi asked him about this challenge and plans to reform the economy.
When we came 1 month ago to the government, we started by going through a parliament and we had the green light for this new investment law. This is to have a fast track and a one-stop shop for these investors. And as I said, today Tunisia needs to have an investment from private sector, locally and overseas. Our aim is to explain to our friends that Tunisia could be a gateway to the MENA region, to Africa also.
What kind of economic sectors that Tunisia is inviting foreign investment to?
First of all, infrastructure. Second, in PPP, it could be in PPP, and second, in the healthcare, in education, also in agribusiness. Tunisia is well known for the agriculture and for the agribusiness.
You said that Tunisia would need about $20 billion to boost the economy. How would Tunisia generate such huge amount of funds?
It wasn't me that said this amount. It was the European Parliament who voted a kind of Marshall Plan for Tunisia. For $20 billion, and we need this money to grow, to have an inclusive growth by investing. And now we are negotiating with all our friends and partners to raise this amount for the Tunisian economy.
How do you rate the current level of U.S. economic assistance to Tunisia and what your country is hoping to get from Washington?
First of all, we have to say that the gap between the political perception and the political support of the United States to Tunisia and the economic support, the gap is quite huge. So we need from our friends to support this new democracy, this small country in this region.
Tunisia faced security threats that negatively affected foreign investment and tourism. How would you describe the status of stability and the flow of investment and tourism?
We are improving in security, really, since 1 year and a half, I will say. But we need more commitment from our friends to help Tunisia to be in a better situation. As you know, Tunisia is not very far from Europe, and the security of Europe is also the security of Tunisia.
Tunisia is hosting the Tunisia 2020 International Conference next month. What is the purpose of that conference and the incentives for more international cooperation with the emerging democracy in Tunisia?
The objective, the aim, my expectation is to raise the economic image of Tunisia, to close this image to its political perception in the world.
That was Fadhel Abdelkefi, Tunisia's Minister of Development, Investment, and International Cooperation. He spoke with reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhaib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at the role of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. We'll discuss the impact of the office as it seeks to improve the quality of life for the District of Columbia's diverse African-born population. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.